Welcome to Torah Yamacha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and I'm really looking forward to learning Sefer Yecheskel with you. Let's begin our journey starting in the very beginning of the Sefer. The first thing we want to know when approaching a Sefer in Tanakh, or really any book, is the setting. So when we talk Yecheskel, we want to know, who is Yecheskel? So let's dig in and begin with Parag Aleph, the introduction to Sefer Yecheskel, and see what we can learn about the setting of this book. Vahi b'shloshim shana baravi'i b'chamisha l'chodesh v'ani b'tel chagola al nahar kvar nivtachu ha-shamayim v'ar'eh mar'ot elokim. In the 30th year, on the 5th day of the 4th month, I was in the Gola, on the banks of the river Kvar. The skies opened up and I saw visions of the divine. Okay, there's an introduction, but wait. Here's the next pasuk. B'chamisha l'chodesh, hi hashana chamishi, l'galut hamelch yoyachin, hayo haya dvar Hashem al Yecheskel ben Buzi ha-kohen, b'eretz kastim al nahar kvar. On the 5th of the month, which is the 5th year counting from the galut of the king Yoyachin, God's word came to Yecheskel the kohen, the son of Buzi, in the land of Kastim, on the banks of the river Kvar. Didn't that seem like another introduction, almost like a draft two? Like one intro was written in Pasuk Aleph, and then it was almost like, well, what about this one? Almost as if each of these introductions was written without knowledge of the other. Why these two introductions? Well, if we look carefully, we will notice that there is a crucial difference between these two versions of the introduction. There's a change in point of view. The first pasuk is written in first person, a first-hand accounting by our Navi Yecheskel. However, unexpectedly, Pasuk Bet seems to interrupt this first pasuk and change to third person, like it's written by a narrator, not even by Yecheskel himself. In fact, Rashi picks up on the same question, why two introductions? And he tells us, Satama Navi, v'lo piresh shmo, mihu, v'lo piresh l'minyan malana. The Navi held back and didn't tell us his name. Or, where are we starting to count from? The counting of what year? Or what event? So we have Yecheskel's introduction in the first pasuk, and then, in the next two pasukim, it is the narrator who fills in the blanks and tells us a more precise date, a more precise location, the name of the Navi, and the fact that he was a Kohen. Why does Yecheskel hold back those details? It almost seems as though Yecheskel himself, in that first pasuk, has a different focus. Yecheskel seems to be telling us his experience, almost as if he wants us to see what he sees, understand what he understands. So let's try to do it. Put ourselves in Yecheskel's shoes as he invites us to do. So imagine what it would be like to experience that. Here you are in the Gola, and you see these incredible heavenly visions, Marot Elohim. What's your reaction likely to be? You're awestruck. The heavens open up. You're seeing godly visions. It's got to be overwhelming. Maybe that would even make you feel small, right? You feel small in the presence of something so overwhelming. Feeling that smallness, very few things matter anymore. You don't matter. Your name doesn't matter. You start talking about a date, 30 years, but then you trail off. You don't even mention where the 30 years start counting from, because time doesn't seem to matter anymore. All that matters is you are in the Gola, in the exile, a surprising place to get Nevuah, and here you are in the presence of the workings of heaven, and you are awestruck and overwhelmed. The second pasuk then comes in and fills in the rest of the details from a more objective, third-person point of view. That first pasuk where Yecheskel is maybe overwhelmed by the presence of God, it's actually a bit of a prelude for the rest of the Sefer, because as we read on, we'll continue to see aspects of Yecheskel being overwhelmed, sometimes even to the point of speechlessness. On the other hand, there'll also be times when Yecheskel seems to go in the opposite direction, verbose, almost like he can't stop speaking. As we get into the rest of the parak, Yecheskel will give us great detail about these visions that he sees. He will speak in what seems almost a stream of consciousness, as if he just can't stop himself. He is so struck by the awareness of what he sees. Chazal called this mystical vision of Yecheskel in Parak Aleph, Chapter 1, Maaseh HaMerkava, the vision of the divine chariot. Those of you who have learned Yeshayahu, Isaiah, may know that in Parak Vav, Yeshayahu also had a Merkava prophecy. This incredible vision of God in a divine chariot. But what's interesting is that they seem to have different styles in these actions, Yeshayahu and Yecheskel. Yechezkel, as we said before, gives so much description. Why does Yechezkel provide so many details when describing the vision? His style is very different than that of Yeshayahu. Unlike Yechezkel's description, Yeshayahu's description is much more terse and spans only a few psukim. In explaining this difference, Chazal compare Yechezkel to a ben kfar, a villager, who doesn't have much experience seeing visions of God and is therefore more struck by the awesomeness of this vision than his counterpart Yeshayahu. This is especially true as the Nevuah was set outside of Israel, an uncommon place to receive prophecy. On the other hand, Yeshayahu, Chazal say, was more similar to a city boy who has the privilege of seeing God on a regular basis, and therefore he doesn't feel as awestruck and doesn't feel compelled to give us detailed blow-by-blow report as Yechezkel does. For Yechezkel, this seems to be new and uncharted territory. We are almost ready to hear some of the details of the vision, but before doing so, it will be helpful to orient ourselves historically so we can better understand the climate and context of the 22 years of Yechezkel's tenure as a Navi. What were his struggles and the struggles of the time? Pasuk Bet tells us that historically, this Nevuah that Yechezkel is about to report takes place on the 5th of the 5th month of Galut Yoyachin. The Galut of Yoyachin is the main exile of the Jews into Babel, in which Nebuchadnezzar sent 10,000 of the most important members of society into exile. This exile is referred to as the Galut of the Charash and Masker, and took place during the reign of the king of Yehuda, Yoyachin. You might remember that Galut from the language of Megillat Esther. Im HaGula Asher HaGlata Im Yechaniah Mel Yehuda. Mordechai was part of that Galut Yechaniah, and it turns out Yechezkel was among those Golim as well. Babel, Babylonia, is of course very important in the story of Jewish history, because yes, there is still a community of Jews who aren't yet exiled and are still living in Israel. But for the first time in history, with this Galut of Yoyachin, there is now a real Jewish community outside of Israel, as well as in Israel itself. As the people in Yechezkel's time will be warned, in around 6 years from now, the temple in Jerusalem will be destroyed, at which point King Zedekiah and much of the rest of the society in Yerushalayim will be sent to Babel as well. But bottom line, destruction is looming. Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel's contemporary still in Israel, also warns of this impending Korban. At this time, there are also false prophets who compete with the words of our prophets Yechezkel and Yirmiyahu and try to convince the people that none of these warnings need to be heeded. Soon enough, they say, we will return to Israel and life will be back to normal. Unfortunately, none of this is true. It is in this climate that Yechezkel gets this vision, and he is awed by it. What is this vision all about? Chazal tell us, Ein Dorshim B'Merkava, that we are not to be doesh from the word lidrosh, delve in and try to understand the intricacies of Merkava. Don't try, Chazal warn us, it doesn't end well. They tell a story of a tinok, a young child, who tried to delve into Hashmal, the fiery glow of God, which is mentioned in these psukim, and parenthetically where the modern word for electricity comes from. This child didn't survive and got zapped, struck down in the process, because of the awesomeness of the elements he was dealing with. These concepts are not comprehensible to regular mortals, Chazal warn, and therefore we are not to delve into them. So we won't be delving into the esoteric mysteries of the Merkava. We aren't going to talk about the significance of each angel and the precise nature of the metaphysical illusions, but we will be trying to wrap our minds around Pshat, the simple meaning of the text. As we read the Merkava, it feels as if Yechezkel is taking on the role of a first-hand reporter, telling us what he sees as he sees it, without really giving us much context. He reports many details of his vision, but he doesn't seem to try to explain them or figure out their significance. In a few chapters from now, Yechezkel will actually come back to this vision that he describes in so much detail in Perek Aleph and repeat elements of it again in future chapters. But as we watch what happens, we will notice something interesting unfolding. Over time, Yechezkel begins to explain what he sees. He seems to gain greater clarity into the meaning of his vision, as if he's slowly starting to piece together what it is that he is seeing. When we get up to those chapters, we will want to focus on trying to discern the understanding that starts to dawn on Yechezkel as he sees a version of this vision a second and a third time. With this background in mind, let's look at the vision as it unfolds in Pasuk Dalet. V'ra'eh v'hinei ruach sara ba'amid ha'tzafon. Anan gadol ve'ishmit lakachat v'noga lo saviv mitocha ke'in ha'chashmal mitocha esh. The vision in her chapter begins in a storm. Yechezkel is drawn in as he observes a storm coming from the north, and he sees a great cloud. Ensconced in the cloud, there is a fire. And as he looks inside the fire, he sees a glow, a noga. Within the noga, he sees what is referred to as chashmal, another layer of concentrated fire glow from within. The general motif here is fascinating. Yechezkel is not just describing what he's seeing in a linear kind of way. He's describing layers upon layers. He's being drawn into the center of his vision and discovering in that center a whole new vision, and in the center of that, another whole vision. As he's drawn in deeper and deeper, one layer within another, he sees the image of four chayot, four animals. These animals seem to have the image of a person. Each of them, in turn, have four faces, those of a human, a lion, an ox, and an eagle. According to Rashi's calculations, there are actually a total of 64 faces. Yechezkel further reports that these animals don't need to turn. They have multiple eyes, kind of like eyes in the back of their heads. And ofanim, wheels that move them at will. We continue to hear more details about layers above these animals. It's all very strange and mysterious and mystical. While it's hard for us to understand this vision and its meaning, a technique that can be helpful to us is to pay attention to the language the Navi uses to describe what he's seeing. We'll notice that this vision contains striking echoes to earlier verses in Torah, which Yechezkel seems to reference as he reports his findings. I'll give you one example. In Pasuk Chav Chet, Yechezkel tries to describe what his vision is most analogous to. The metaphor he reaches for is the rainbow. K'mar'eh ha'keshe asher yebanan b'yom ha'geshem, k'ein mar'eh ha'noga saviv. The vision of a rainbow in a cloud on a rainy day. For me, when I think rainbow and cloud, a famous story comes to my mind. I think Mabul, the great flood. Is the Navi inviting us to see flood parallels? If the text wants us to see this vision as intricately connected to the flood stories, we're likely to see other references in the story as well. So the next question is, do we see any other references to the flood in our parak? Let's go back to the very first pasuk of our parak, which we read earlier. Yechezkel tells us, Nivtechu Hashemayim, the skies opened up. Similar to the beginning of the Mabul, where we see a similar, unusual language, Arubot Hashemayim Nivtechu, the windows of the skies open up. It's almost as if Yechezkel's vision is bookended by these two flood references. These are not just two references to the flood, they actually describe diametrically opposing moments in the flood story. Think about it. The flood story starts with the skies opening up. What is the feeling when the sky is opening up? Probably dread. Definitely fear. It definitely does not feel like a good sign. It signifies destruction, the beginning of the end. Conversely, at the end of the flood story, there was a rainbow, a promise from God that he would not destroy the world. Rainbow is a sign of hope starting from the days of the flood. The rainbow evokes a feeling that actually feels like the opposite of destruction. It signifies a feeling of hope, and with that, a responsibility to continue and rebuild. In Noach's case, he goes on to plant a vineyard and start a new life. Perhaps the message in Yechezkel is a similar one. Destruction is looming, but Yechezkel likens the vision he sees to a rainbow. There is hope and a chance to rebuild. As we just pointed out, Yechezkel and the Jews at large are living through a scary time. The Galut has already started. We have been taken from our land, from our temple, our Mikdash, and we are people in pain, surrounded by uncertainty and fear. What will happen next? Is everything going to be okay? It's scary in the middle, but does it work out in the end? When Yechezkel brings in rainbow language, might he be reminding himself and the people around him, and even us, the readers, that no, it's not over. The rainbow means hope, a new path forward in the Gola, in the hope of bringing the final Gola, the final redemption. As we will begin to see, there is a reason Chazal referred to Yechezkel as the Navi of the Gola, as well as the Navi of the Gola. The final pasuk in Perek Aleph ends with Yechezkel falling on his face in awe of God as he hears the call, the voice of God speaking, Midaber. What does God tell him? Is this the beginning of the mission that God gives him? We will find out tomorrow as we continue in Parak Bet. Thank you for studying together, Le'ilu Nishmat, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander.